Hi, and welcome to a KCUR special called KC Remembers, a tribute to Walt Bodine. I'm Bill Anderson. With Walt's passing Sunday, the staff of KCUR wanted to bring you sounds, quotes, and moments from Walt's illustrious, nearly 70-year journalistic career. We talked to his colleagues about what made his work unique and special. We feature audio from Walt in studio and in the field. We have clips that include Public Radio's Ira Glass and Garrison Keillor, just for starters. The archives take us to breaking news events, like the Ruskin Heights tornado. Walt steps into a StoryCorps studio and talks about losing his eyesight, and much more. Walt Bodine, KC Remembers. Good morning, I'm Bill Anderson. Central Standard was kind enough to cede this hour so that we can bring you a final on-air celebration of the life and career of Walt Bodine. We call it KC Remembers. When Walt passed away early Sunday morning at the age of 92, he left a journalistic legacy that intersected with print, television, and radio. Nearly 70 years in the business. He also served in the military, and he worked as a soda jerk at his dad's drugstore. He flirted with stage life and was a gag writer at one point. He was doing what we call multimedia journalism long before that became a part of the language spoken by those of us in the radio industry. Ahead, we'll listen to clips of Walt Bodine guests. Garrison Keillor's Guy Noir shows up as an example. And we'll hear about interviews that range from presidential candidate George McGovern to entertainer Jerry Lewis. From funny recollections of a lion in the studio to a stupefied squirrel. Walt stepped into a StoryCorps mobile recording studio a few years back. He talked about losing his sight. We'll play that for you. His sons Tom and Marty share some stories, and we hear his peers talk about Walt's formula for success. First, some clips in a montage. It shows his wit, his charm, and demonstrates his range of topics of knowledge for conversation.
This is the Walt Bodine Show, and what a joy to welcome Carol Channing.
Hello, Walt Bodine.
It's sure good to see you.
Oh, I've remembered your name for about 30 years.
Here in the studio, let's see, how did we ever get a pairing like this? Senator McGovern, George McGovern, former candidate for president, and Ed Meese. I have with me the Queen Mother of local history. Jane Flynn, and you know what that means. It means that we're ready for another session of As We Were, and that means we take a look at the city that once was. And we're back again. Now, that was Bill Anderson's voice you just heard.
Good morning, Walt.
And you are the program director. Is there some kind of a thing that program directors don't get allergies? You sound normal.
Yeah, I don't suffer from allergies. I think I have a slight reaction to grass. When I mow my lawn, I sometimes have a reaction.
Yeah.
Be careful there, Walt.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You're terrible.
Yeah. I try to be. Yeah. Okay. Hey. Good morning. This is the Walt Bodine Show, and we are happy to see Garrison Keillor. How are you doing?
It's good to be here, Mr. Bodine. Good to be any place, actually.
When you write a sketch like Guy Noir and so on, you write all those?
Are you asking me if I write the Guy Noir script?
Yeah, that's...
Walt, is that what you want to know?
That's the idea, yeah.
She walked into my office in the Acme building.
Beautiful.
Her pants were so tight I could read the label on her underwear. It said Tuesday.
Try a tomato plate, too. Here's Cacciatore, Dore. Taste the bologna, Tony. Everybody eats when they come to my house.
And for those who always wonder about it, Cab Calloway, that's who that is singing that. And that's been our theme song for nigh on to how long? What do you say, Charles?
I think it's been your theme song for at least 9 or 10 years, hasn't it?
I think so.
Yeah. Well, for this show, anyway.
Yeah, because this is the Food Critic Show. Around the table are...
Chris Kobach at the UMKC School of Law.
And Bob Wilson from the English department at UMKC.
Gentlemen, you are the word mavens extraordinaire. I just want to tell you a quick serious note. When I was first taking over as news director of Channel 4, I'd talked to a friend of mine who was in the press, and I said, give me any tips you have on leadership. And he gave me a little book.
Mm-hmm.
And what it said in there is, remember this, you can rebuke somebody directly, you can be critical, but never use sarcasm. Mm-hmm. They said sarcasm happens to be a wound that will hurt for years and years, and relationships with that person will never be mm-hmm. the same.
Yeah.
Pretty wise. This is Walt Bodine, and I guess you know it's Friday. And I guess you know that means every second Friday, we meet up with the film critics. And I bet you also think that might be movie music. Am I right, Robert?
Yeah, it sure is.
All right. These are the people who bring you The Four Seasons. It's called Nature in the City, and one of its main tasks is to acquaint you and I with the fact that the city may seem like the sole habitat of human beings, and assume that cities are for human beings, and that's that. And they've settled it with me a long time ago that there are a lot of other creatures besides us for whom the city is a very natural environment. Mm-hmm. And I won't repeat that only because that is a lesson that over and over I think more people should hear, so I just did it one more time.
Okay. The first thing is I've figured out how to get rid of the squirrels jumping on my bird feeder.
There's a lot of people interested to know that, Darcy.
Okay. It just really ticked me off that the squirrels were getting up there to get the bird seed that was meant for the birds.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, necessity is the mother of invention, and God gave me some brains, so I'd better use them. And then it occurred to me that man in his wisdom or whatever had made Vaseline.
Had made what?
Vaseline.
Vaseline.
Oh, yes, that's right.
So yeah. I whipped out my big one-pound jar of Vaseline, and I trotted out there, and I Vaselined up the whole pole. And if you have never seen a stupefied squirrel go Vaseline out your pole holding the bird feeders, and that those squirrels will jump up on the pole, and they will get a stupefied look when they go sliding right on down.
Walt, we learn something every time.
I'll tell you. I want to thank you a lot, and we'll move on and have a nice weekend and try to put some of the troubles behind you. And we'll see you Monday morning at 10 o'clock right here. Bye-bye.
This is a remembrance of Walt Bodine on KCUR and KCUR.org. It's called KC Remembers, and we'll have it posted on our website. I'm Bill Anderson. Before we progress, a reminder that a public celebration of Walt's life will take place Saturday afternoon at 1 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. It'll include an open microphone, and people will be invited to reflect on Walt's life. Walt described himself as a multimedia public nuisance. Those of us who engineered his shows as announcers over the years also knew him as devilish. We never knew when he might engage us upon the completion of a mid-show break. He might want to know what music we were playing. He might ask us about how far we might be willing to be compromised in pursuit of money. My most memorable, as you just heard, started with Walt asking me if I suffered from allergies. It went downhill fast. He poked us, but it was always done good-naturedly. I recall him doing a show segment about ice cream. He asked announcer Jeremy Kate about his favorite. I rolled with laughter when Jeremy responded soberly, "I hate ice cream." Walt just moved on. He enjoyed doing radio. He lived for it. He was well-equipped for it. Walt was an accommodating, friendly host, most of the time. He would invite us in with a homespun, "Come on in," and it was as if suddenly we were sitting in the comfort of a living room or having a conversation at the kitchen counter. This would be a good time to go to a documentary called To KC with Love. We've isolated clips of Walt in action. We talk about his love of KC, his indignant response to anyone who might dare call this nothing more than a big town. This is a documentary created by current staffer Suzanne Hogan and former Walt co-host Gina Kaufman.
And good morning to you. Welcome to the Walt Bodine Show. And a merry morning it is, and we'll look around to see what it is that's going to happen here today.
And I, for that purpose, I always turn my head to the right and say, Gina.
Hi, Walt.
Gina Kaufman.
That's right. We are here today as part of our Kansas City History Series with Monroe Dodd. He's a local historian. Good morning, Monroe.
Good morning, Gina and Walt.
Today's topic is the history of broadcast journalism in Kansas City. And, of course, we have another expert on the history of broadcast journalism in Kansas City here in the room. That is Walt Bodine. And producer Suzanne Hogan and I talk to people in our community about Walt's career. We also listened to some footage from the Mar Sound Archives, and we created a 25-minute retrospective on Walt's career to share with you. So when we come back from that, we'll get historical perspective from Monroe, and then we'll open up the lines for your questions about the history of broadcast journalism in Kansas City. Let's give that 25-minute documentary a listen now.
This is Walt Bodine.
And this is Gene Glenn.
And this program is Conversation.
What do you say to that?
What do you think of that, Larry?
Time for Conversation with Walt Bodine and Gene Glenn.
The sound of Kansas City. You're truly WHB.
Nightbeat in Kansas City, 710 on your radio. This is Walt Bodine.
Hello there, this is Teeny's Tiny Talk Show. Our special guest this time is so stoned out of his mind, I think I'll take open calls first.
I describe myself as a multimedia public nuisance.
In what way are you a nuisance?
Well, I don't think I am, but I'm being nice about it.
Walt Bodine is an icon in Kansas City, a multimedia broadcast nuisance in this town for more than 60 years. He went from radio to television and found his way back home to radio again. But how did he earn his place of distinction as Kansas City's Dean of Broadcasting? And what made him the journalist he is today? Walt might say, it all started in the sandbox.
My earliest impression that I can remember was a sandbox in the back of the house. Reality came to me sharply while I was in that sandbox one day because somebody, a motorist, came along and hit a dog. And the dog made horrible noises, and the motorist drove on. And then later, the police came, and they shot the dog. That was just absolutely horrifying to me. You know, I couldn't think anything except that it was reality.
So was your sense of justice offended by how it all went down?
Well, yeah. And when the cop came and went bang with a gun.
From the sandbox to the broadcast studio, Walt's reputation as the conscience of Kansas City was established early. But when it comes to Walt's childhood, all roads lead back to his father's pharmacy.
It was a great place. Kids that couldn't stand high school food would come across the street, and we'd give them chili dogs and just a chili sandwich. Can you imagine that?
I can't imagine a chili sandwich, actually.
It's very good. I thought it was a good idea because not only did my dad think of that and put it into practice, but the kids are eating it up big time.
And then you had the second location for the pharmacy. Is that the one that was open 24 hours?
Yeah, 24 hours. Linwood and Troost. We ran day and night, and at 7 in the morning, I would come on duty to man the soda fountain.
Do you think that an all-night pharmacy is a little like a talk show?
What do you mean?
Just people coming in and out and
Yeah, that's a little like a talk show. Yeah. And we used to get some talk shows sitting at the fountain.
What was your first job in the news biz?
It was in the drugstore. Our drugstore at Linwood and Troost also was a bus station. And we sold tickets on the Greyhound, Crown Coach, and other bus lines. For that reason, we had people in the drugstore, some who just came in to eat breakfast or whatever. And then the others were passengers who were just sitting down waiting for the bus. So in order to sort them out, we put in a loudspeaker system, and we would call the bus line when they came, you know. Greyhound bus number 22 headed for St. Louis, Chicago, and Illinois, and I would have to read that over the microphone. Well, I kind of liked that. And then I finally persuaded my father that what I would like to do is read the newspaper to people. I would duck my head down so I would like to think that people were thinking that I was on the radio.
He kind of got his first shot at a microphone, reading the newspaper out to people sitting around the bus station in my dad's. I guess it wasn't a drugstore then. I'm not sure what it was.
This is Walt Bodine's son, Tom Bodine.
But that was his first taste of amplified vocal cords. He liked it. From there, there was those early struggling years, of course, before I was born. But I know the stories, of course, he's told. And in fact, we made a family trip down to Sedalia, Missouri. So we drove by the place where Dad had his first job, which lasted a week, KDRO, Sedalia. And they'd had him doing a lot of sport work, and you know sports is not his forte. Anyway, he got canned after a week. But he's made it into a memorable story, and he didn't let that stop him.
The subsequent chapters in Walt's career have more than made up for those humble beginnings. Since his ill-fated week as a sportscaster, Walt has made quite a name for himself in both radio and television. His quick wit, conversational style, and unrepentant enjoyment of a hearty meal have made him notorious. But Walt is perhaps best known for hosting a late-night call-in radio show called Night Beat, starting in the mid-1960s.
A lot of people, actually baby boomers, remember him because their parents would send them to bed. And being typical kids, they didn't want to go to bed. And this was the age of the transistor radio. It was a new thing. So kids would get their transistor radio with a little one-plug earpiece and sit and listen. And there was nothing else on but Dad's show. WHB was the big teeny bopper station then. So up to the time Walt's show came on, it was all, you know, the 60s top 40. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was like a dual personality radio station. It would switch to his talk show, Night Beat, and I guess the kids would just stick with it.
And now, here is your Night Beat moderator, Mr. Walt Bodine.
Welcome to WHB Night Beat, where tonight we'll be having an open line and a chance to hear what's on the public mind.
I am one of those legions of people who listened avidly to Walt when we were teenagers. In those days before the internet and before the TV stations were on all night long, we would sometimes crawl beneath the covers, turn on the transistor radio, and listen to something, anything, and Walt Bodine was often on the air. It was a live human being talking in those days before the airwaves were filled with live human beings talking.
A cousin of a friend of mine came up to me one day and says, I've got to meet your dad.
Walt Bodine's son, Marty Bodine.
And he said, and I'll tell you why. He says, I had a very rough childhood. I was stuck in a boys' home from the time I was about 4 years old. And he told me that when he became an adolescent, they had no radios or televisions, but he figured out how to build a crystal radio set. And he remembered listening to my dad on Night Beat, hiding under the covers in his dorm. And he said that's what got him through his adolescent years. That's pretty striking.
One night I told this guy who said he had a lion on Roanoke, in his apartment on Roanoke, to bring it down. To my amazement, when the door of the studio opened and he came in, he had a full-grown, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Productions lion.
Oh, brother, if I can only tell you what I'm looking at. Well, I can. Play-by-play, Mr. Webber believes in togetherness with this lioness, and so while I was about to do the commercial, Mr. Webber got on the floor with the lion. Mr. Webber has just been eaten entirely up alive. No, got on the floor with the lion, flat on his back, and then the lion came over and with its big face looked down into his face, which is just a nice, normal, average human face. Or was up till just lately. It's the sort of thing you'd see in any studio any night.
My brother Marty and I found out that Jerry Lewis was going to be on. And this is in the age when Jerry Lewis was, you know, a really popular, funny guy. First off, you go through this moment of disconnect when Jerry Lewis is going to be on my dad's show. You know, what's he even doing in Kansas City? Much less hanging out with my father. You know, you tend not to think of your parents as connected with anything that you think might be cool.
I remember at one point he had Jerry Lewis, and you know, and of course I knew I'd gone down enough times that I needed to just sit back in the corner and be quiet and don't make any noise in the studio. And here is this guy at the time, Jerry Lewis, was one of the biggest stars in the country. And I finally got to go up to him and say hi. And I was just overwhelmed at the fact that Jerry Lewis was sitting in my dad's studio.
Do you have a question that you have always wanted to ask Walt?
It probably wouldn't be a fair question, but which of the number of people he's interviewed has been the most memorable?
I've always wondered if he ever yearned to have gone somewhere else.
Did you ever get a straight answer from a politician? Any politician, any time, ever? Just get an answer to your question?
Where the bodies are buried in this town, because if anybody knows, it's him.
He got the opportunity to come to the university and do both teaching and talk shows, and that's just been a dream job for him since. Walt's really tried to bring civility to his work on the radio, and that's why, part of why these last 26 years with the university and KCUR, he's felt like this is his real home broadcast-wise, because civility's what this station's all about as well.
How important and valuable it is to gather a community of people around a program.
Aaron Barnhart covers television and the media for the Kansas City Star.
You have people of all ages, all demographic groups, listening to his show every day. This is Walt's audience. They all listen because of some basic tenets that Walt Bodine laid down a long, long time ago, which is civility and variety.
His show is so much like maybe a living room that is just inviting for people to come in, and it really is, it's just such a forum, but in the best possible way for ideas and for also the interesting things about Kansas City and the people that make up Kansas City. And he just continues to have this amazing curiosity about who people are and what makes them do what they do.
So we were talking about the variety and all of that, and I said, you know, Walt, it's not every show that one day they're talking about macaroni and cheese, and the very next show they've got a guy who used to work on Wall Street explaining the economic collapse. And he laughed and said, young lady, I'll take that as a compliment. And I think he was right to do that.
I like that it's always different. There's always sort of something new. And you never know, the thing I always like about it, the thing you never know is when Walt's going to get off one of these trademark wit of his and just have that zinger that carries you through the whole hour.
Walt Bodine Show producer Suzanne Hogan.
Hey, you know, we can talk about this topic that may seem, you know, kind of wild and crazy for an hour, or we can also talk about this very serious, issue-driven topic, or, hey, this interesting person. I mean, it's just, you know, it works because of Walt and the listeners.
I think it's wonderful that every time you tune in, you are joining an audience of thousands of people, some of whom have listened to him for literally thousands of hours and consider him a good friend.
What do you believe is his most significant accomplishment?
Well, that's easy. 50-plus years on the air. You don't do something for 50 years unless you're damn good at it. That's Walt.
Being a father and a husband, in addition to those things, is more than an accomplishment.
What do you think of as your dad's greatest professional accomplishment?
He combined his love of people and his love of reporting and put those two together, and that's why that's what made him a pioneer in talk radio.
He's been able to be as, I think, impartial as a person can be, and I think that's the foundation of good journalism.
What do I believe is his most significant accomplishment? Integrity.
Fellow broadcaster Steve Bell.
Some would say longevity in the business, I'm sure, and that is an inspiration to me, but what's really inspiring is that he's lasted this long on the air and still has everybody's respect. Nobody can tell a story about his backstabbing someone or sensationalizing a story or plagiarizing somebody or misrepresenting the facts or any of the things that get so many people in the news and talk show business in trouble.
Walt Bodine has the capacity to ask questions, and you have absolutely no idea where he stands on the issue.
Congressman Emanuel Cleaver.
And I think that is extremely important today in a world where we have very, very biased interviewing taking place, both on the left and the right.
One of the things that I really admire is how much he thinks about his listeners. He really cares about the people listening to the program more than he cares about how he comes off on the air, more than he cares about how favorably the guest is portrayed. It's all about the listener, and I think that's really admirable.
He is a voice of calm and reason and fairness, and I think when, you know, especially if they're in an area of life or in an area of controversy where they might be inclined to mistrust the media or be wary of exposure to the media, that he's the kind of guy that people can come to and they know they'll be treated fairly and objectively. And I think he's been sort of a pillar in that way for many years.
Anytime a person is facing Walt Bodine in an interview, particularly an elected official, you come in, you know, somewhat intimidated. I mean, after all, you're being interviewed by Walt Bodine, and there's nobody else in the Kansas City media market, you know, who is a Walt Bodine. And even if you had a personal relationship with Walt, as I have had over the years, it meant nothing. It meant nothing. It's not like, well, Walt Bodine likes me, so he's going to throw some softballs. It meant nothing. And I think he has that reputation in this area, and I think any elected official will tell you the same thing.
You know, I think he's set a standard for broadcasting in this area that, you know, we all should aspire to live up to.
Walt has put a human face on the people of Kansas City. He knows how to talk to anybody. Walt makes this town real.
He is the voice that identifies you to Kansas City and that has brought the world to Kansas City and, to some extent, Kansas City to the rest of some of the world.
Over the years, Walt has shared a special relationship to the people, places, and events of Kansas City. To many in our area, Walt Bodine and Kansas City are synonymous, their identities blurred.
Once in a while, I meet somebody, maybe usually a newcomer, that comes from New York or somewhere, who didn't like the city. I would defend it, or I would be offended that they didn't see what I saw in this city. When you're in a middle-sized city in the middle of the country, well, you have to speak up for your town or think about it anyway in good terms and wanting it to be good. I hear people say different things about it. I hear them say, it's just a great big small town. It is a city.
Walt has informed and even comforted the people of Kansas City through many distressing events. Longtime colleague Dan Verbeck recalls.
Back in the 1950s, there was a huge explosion down on Southwest Boulevard involving some gasoline tanks. Walt was the reporter on that, and we've heard the audio, which may have been lost between then and now. It is a stunning representation of what somebody can do to paint a word picture to take you to the scene without your having any kind of image at all other than your mind and his voice and his skill and his art. The other was the Ruskin Heights tornado of 1957.
Diary of a Disaster. Part 3. Aftermath.
It is, they are some of the most moving descriptions of any kind of calamitous event I've ever heard.
For the dead of the May 20th tornado in suburban Kansas City, it was the end of the world. For the injured, it was a painful beginning. For the unhurt survivor, it became a lasting memory, a tattoo upon the mind that nothing would ever completely remove.
He talked about being there the night of the tornado and being out talking to people in a shelter, and of a man coming up looking dignified but somewhat dazed and saying, "Has anyone seen a little baby? I had her in my arms 1 minute, and then the wind came, and then she was gone." But only Walt could tell it in a way that touched me.
The story I tell about Walt Bodine, and the story I actually feel most deeply about, was the night of the collapse of the skywalks at the Hyatt Hotel.
Monroe Dodd is a print journalist and local historian.
More than 100 people died, scores more were injured. It was one of the most, probably the most terrible disaster in Kansas City history. And Walt came on the radio that night and went for hours and hours into the wee hours of the morning. I worked at the Kansas City Times at the time. We put the paper to bed at 1 or 2 in the morning. I went home and just sort of stared at the wall thinking, how do you deal with a massive catastrophe like this? Even in my own heart, not so much at the newspaper, turned on the radio, and there was Walt talking to people, and I think, to my mind, that was his finest hour.
He stayed on the air that night.
Tom Bodine.
They just, you know, abandoned the regular cover, regular programming, and went with the talk show all the way through the night and into the morning. And he was just doing everything he could to give the community a voice and a place to connect. It was a call-in show, so people could call in with whatever bits of information they had, shock, grief, all of that. But he was providing that sounding board for the community, and I think as hard a night as a person could have in that field, but really an important role for the community that he played.
UMKC political science professor Max Skidmore.
Before I came to Kansas City, I understand during the days of riots and student protests and so forth that Walt was a voice of calm and reason and a staunch advocate of civil rights and civil liberties both in Kansas City, and was a force for reason and calm in the city.
I believe we have more in common as human beings, walking on two legs, bleeding red blood, needing food, needing love, needing the things that we do, much more in common than we have apart.
I think his most significant accomplishment is to consistently and continually be this force in Kansas City. The way people talk when they talk about Walt Bodine is something that, I don't know, that's a really rare, special thing.
I think Walt Bodine has demonstrated that age, like Satchel Paige used to say, is a state of mind.
You know, there's a lot to be said for longevity. People discount it oftentimes. To the outsider, it might just seem like a gold watch, just like, you know, a pat on the head. All you did was manage to stay on the air. Big deal. Well, it is a big deal because there is no tougher business than broadcasting. It is a tough world to stay on the air for 10 or 15 or 20 years, to say nothing of 40 or 50 years. And he did it. He continued to be a voice and a presence in the community that people wanted to listen to. And that really says a lot about Walt Bodine.
There's something to say about longevity.
KCUR General Manager Patty Cahill explains.
There's something to say about being able to feel comfortable in your own skin, to know what you're doing, when you're doing it, how to do it, and to help other people learn the same kinds of things that that you've learned over the years. And I think that's one of the things I really respect about Walt, is that he's been there, done that, and has carried that over to people at KCUR.
When I think of Walt, knowing him over the years, I think of two things. One, just how generous and supportive he has been to me over the years. And the other thing I think about is very early on, I think Walt, one day we had lunch down at Lydia's. You mentioned that day, just sort of out of the blue, that, you know, sometimes you're doing the show and things are going along just swimmingly when all of a sudden things fall apart. It's a phone call that takes a show off in a different direction, or a guest who sort of goes to pot on you right in front of your eyes during the course of an hour. And suddenly the show that was feeling so good has suddenly feels very, very wrong. It's sort of fallen apart. And you mentioned that can happen so quickly in just a matter of seconds. I think it was your way of saying very kindly, hey, stay on your toes, kid. And I've always recalled that advice, and I've always appreciated it. So, Walt, I appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Walt swears he does not remember this happening, but the memory is so vivid for me that I am sure it happened. It goes back to the year that I joined the Channel 50 staff as a newscaster, and Walt took me in his office to lay down the basics of what we were going to be doing. Walt picked up a piece of particularly dull Associated Press copy about a traffic accident, and he explained that we wouldn't be doing a story like that unless there was virtually no news at all to report on that day. And if we did, he said, certainly no dull Associated Press-style copy, please. And so he ad-libs an example of how the story should be written, and it went something like, if we're going to do this story here, it goes something like this. A faint glimmer of dawn was breaking over the eastern horizon this morning when two cars approached each other on a narrow road in eastern Jackson County. With the crest of a hill between them, neither knew the other driver was there. Bang! Bodies. And he swears that he never would have said that, but he did say that. And he may not remember it, but I've been writing my copy that way ever since.
Walt has, from the time I started working here, been so complimentary and so generous in his input and in his appreciation of the work I do. And coming from Walt Bodine, that means a lot.
Fill in the blanks. Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what blank is to blank.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what Homer was to the ancient Greeks.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what cicadas are to the summer nights.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City as peanut butter is to jelly. Seldom do people want one without the other.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what sauce is to ribs.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what malt vinegar is to fish and chips.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what cheese is to macaroni.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what recess is to the school day. It's really fun, but it's also really serious.
Walt is to Kansas City what the most prominent media figures have been to the whole country.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what Edward R. Murrow was to 50s television.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what the Kansas City Power and Light Building is to the downtown skyline. It's recognizable and it's always there.
Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what the blue stuff you put your combs in is to a barbershop. That's right, you heard me. It's indispensable. You can't have a good barbershop without the blue stuff you put your combs in. And Kansas City wouldn't be Kansas City without Walt. So there.
And don't you forget it.
This documentary was produced by Suzanne Hogan and Gina Kaufman, with assistance from intern Jamie Medlicott. We would like to thank all KCUR staff members, community experts, and members of the Bodine family who were interviewed for this production, and the Mars Sound Archives for access to historical clips. Thanks in particular to Walt Bodine.
And there we are. I'm not choked up, but if I were a choked up kind of guy, I'd be choked up right now.
You've been listening to a documentary called To KC with Love. It's archived at kcur.org, along with a lot of other content about Walt. This is a special edition, a celebration of Walt Bodine, who passed away on Sunday. KC remembers. It's a tribute to the Dean of Broadcasting, Walt Bodine. I'm Bill Anderson. You're listening to KCUR and KCUR.org. A lot of the program segments you hear on KCUR talk programs are segments that Walt and his producers launched. Nature in the City, The Book Doctors, all three Central Standard Friday shows. I remember The Hellraisers as one of my first introductions to Kansas City radio listening. I'm sure you have one or two or more you've enjoyed. Maybe it was The Word Mavens. But Walt tackled a lot of subjects and spoke to a lot of people, a lot of celebrities. Let's listen to an interview with a man who is among the most popular, most innovative host producers in the public radio domain. Here's Walt with Ira Glass.
Rolling through, here is the man who gave the world This American Life. And Ira Glass is sitting here right beside me, and we're just sort of trading old radio stories and old cop stories and old creative stories. But I admire the creative more than anything. And you really, you've done it right where for television, right where it hurts. You're doing something that people like, identify with, and see as real.
Yeah, on a good week anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, can I ask you a question about radio? Because I feel like my knowledge of what happened in radio sort of stops before the 70s.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious to know if you think that radio was better in the 50s and 40s when you were coming up, or was it mostly crap? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, did you ever listen to when CBS used to late at night put on one or two of the old shows?
Sure, like Radio Mystery Theater. When I was a kid, that was still on the air.
Yeah, but you know what? They're corny.
Yeah, I know.
It's overacting from the word go.
Yeah, exactly. They're like bad sitcoms and bad, like, whatever from TV. Yeah,
right. And it seemed like this was maybe from the junk shop. If there was some good stuff, it wasn't on very often. And you listen to it, and people would say, well, just give me the old shows like they used to have them. And I thought, you're not going to like it, because you've been since then, you know, even radio drama has been perfected to a great degree after that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But
so you're not nostalgic for radio the way it was?
No, I'm not. And I was wandering around in those days. After a while, I realized being a staff announcer won't get it. And what did grab me was news.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested in some stuff about you that I heard about and read about in the whole business of news.
Okay.
And newscasts. You've done everything in the first place. You've written newscast. You've written about everything you can write for radio,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, I was a newscast writer for Morning Edition for a little while.
Yeah,
and
you were on, what is it, the Talk of the Nation?
Yeah, I filled in as host on Talk of the Nation for five or six months. I got to say, which did not play to my strengths as a broadcaster. Live interviewing, I feel like, is a really different.
Yeah.
It requires a really different sense of pacing and I don't know what then I think I had, like, I think I was okay, but I certainly there was nothing special to what I was doing. I feel like, actually, in a certain way, the things that make me good at my current job is that I get really obsessive and really I'll take, like, if you're interviewing somebody on tape, like most of the people on our show, everybody on our show is interviewed on tape, and so we'll interview them for an hour and a half, and we can go down very long digressive paths,
uh-huh.
and that's actually where it starts to get interesting, and then we cut out all the stuff, you know, at
that's
the beginning.
That's really good, yeah.
But you can't really do that on live radio.
No,
you just
no.
can't head down a long digressive
no,
road
what you,
like that.
What you get is what you get.
Exactly.
For sure.
Yeah.
That's host Walt Bodine with host Ira Glass of This American Life. We're remembering Walt today. He passed away Sunday at the age of 92. Walt's family is hosting a celebration of Walt's life. It will take place Saturday afternoon at 1 at Unity Temple on the Plaza. And the public will be invited to participate in an open microphone session just to talk about Walt and share stories. A few years ago, StoryCorps was in Kansas City with a mobile recording studio. Walt and his son Tom stepped in, and they talked about Walt's loss of sight.
I wanted to ask you about one part of your private life, which is...
Can I get out of here first? No.
There's the exit, okay. But it is locked.
All right.
Which is in the 70s, when I was a teenager, you began to lose your eyesight, and it did a slow fade out on you over a couple of decades.
Mm-hmm.
It's just always been something I have admired, the way you have faced that hardship with never a complaint, and you've just dealt with it and pressed ahead.
No use to complain, because nothing will change. I will tell you a funny story, though, about blindness. I was very slow to give up my car. I was trying to get it to my mind that, yes, you can. There is still a living after cars, if you just think about it, and I did, and it did work out all the way up and down the line, but it was not easy. The day I finally decided that I've got to stop, I almost hit a pedestrian, and I thought, this is it. I can't take this chance again. And so I got home, and I got on the phone, and I called the then chief of police, who was a friend of mine, Norm Karen. And I said, Norman, I have good news for you. And he said, what? I said, I just tore up my driver's license, and I am not going to drive a car again. He said, "Well, that's good news to me. Now I can retire."
So. Well, you had also told me that even after all these years, and it's been, what, 20, 25 years,
mm-hmm.
that you still have dreams about driving?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I dream lots of times of driving a little sports car, maybe one of those bright red English models. And I often dream that I'm driving on a particular road, the old number 10 highway from here to Lawrence. It was snake-like in the way it maneuvered through the hills and so on. And you, if you were a driver, you had to keep your mind on it.
Did you ever get stopped by the police in your dreams?
Yes, once or twice. And luckily, both times, it would be a cop I knew. And so they'd say something and send you on your way.
Like, let's see your driver's license. And then you'd say, I tore it up and gave it to the chief.
Yeah. Though by that time, I was behind no more wheels. I have not touched the steering wheel since. And I still would love to be doing it.
Those of us who worked with Walt, for me it was about 20 years, witnessed the decline of his health. His sight faded, his knees wore out. At one time he was using a cane, then a wheelchair. His hearing faded. He dealt with pain and other personal issues and loss. Eventually, we put co-host into the studio chair next to Walt just to help. His health slowed him down, but his love of radio and his passion for radio never let him down. His passion never waned, and until the last couple of years, he didn't miss many shows. On a personal note, Walt and I would occasionally be at odds. That's typical of the relationship between a program director and a talk show host. That's just how it works. It's a healthy tension. It's necessary to the process of creativity and growth. But we trusted one another, and we respected one another, and we liked working on the air as host and co-host when that happened. A funny thing about that tension, I remember losing a producer. I was incredibly high on this one potential candidate, but because it was my choice, and getting back to what I talked about with the tension between program director and host, Walt was suspicious, perhaps because he thought it was necessary to have that be a part of this process. So we went to lunch, the three of us, and it was a disaster. Somehow, we managed to hire her, and she's on the line with us from her office in Sacramento, California. Good morning, Kelly Weiss.
Hi, Bill.
How can you talk to us a little bit about that day? Do you remember it?
Well, there were so many lunches that I went to with Walt. There were so many lunches. But I do remember that when the three of us went, and you and I, were trying our best to be positive, and Walt was just being very negative and saying whatever, you know, just anything he could think of, nitpicking it at anything we said. And you could just tell from that he was a little uneasy and maybe he was a little scared about where his show was going. But we walked out of there and we looked at each other and kind of shrugged our shoulders and thought, oh boy, well, let's see if we can make this work.
Yeah.
And in the end,
it did work.
It did.
Yeah,
it worked very well.
I was surprised that I was thinking, oh my gosh, this is the worst. Walt's not going to buy this at all, and we're going to be back at square one. But no, he was game and went for it. Turns out you guys had a great relationship.
Yes, we did. We did. And, you know, starting as his producer or as an intern to the show, then as producer, and then later a co-host with him on the air. And we did really develop a friendship, and he was making me laugh every morning with his little sayings that you didn't hear anybody else saying. Like, we'd come in the door in the morning, and Ruth Ann would be there to greet us. She'd say, "How are you doing, Walt?" And he'd say, "Just ducky." Every day. That made me laugh. Sometimes he would switch it up with peachy keen. And I thought, boy, I've never heard anybody say these things before. But, you know, Walt had a lot of color. His language was very colorful. So anyway, he was always making me laugh. And then he was just a pro. He could go on air and not even know who he was interviewing or what he was going to talk about. He just is there, and bam, out of the gate. He's ready to go. He's got somebody at ease, whoever the guest may be, from a politician to a small business owner to a stay-at-home mom. It didn't matter. He was instantly building a relationship with them. You know, the show, it just was smooth.
Yeah, and what do you take from that? What did you learn from that? Because at that point in time, you're still pretty new in this business.
Oh, yeah, I was just out of college. I mean, I was a few years out of college, and all of a sudden I'm on the air with Walt Bodine doing a talk show, the Dean of Broadcasting. But, you know, I...
No pressure there.
Yeah, right, no pressure. I mean, probably one of the most important things for me was just to relax. And Walt was just as cool as a cucumber. And he just said, you know, don't put on airs. Don't act like you know it all. Let them talk and listen to what they say. And that is some of the best advice. I still use it every day as a journalist. To think that I was in my 20s and I would look over at him and think, boy, there's a lot to learn from this guy. It was all about his job and all about the listeners and about KCUR and journalism in general. He just kept that. It was a real mission for him. It was genuine, too. He took a real interest in being a mentor to people. And he, you know, after that lunch, when he decided that he was going to take me under his wing, so to speak, and show me the ropes, he had no trouble doing that. It was natural for him. He was a natural teacher, and he really taught just a lot by example.
Mm-hmm.
And just looking and watching him and saying, gosh, he makes it look easy. How does he do that? Yeah. I mean, he's live on the air, but he's just talking to somebody. You know, what I take away is that anybody I go to, from a homeless person on the street to the governor of California, I want to know what they have to say, and Walt taught me that.
Kelly, I want you to fill in the blanks here. Walt Bodine is to Kansas City like blank is to blank.
I think I would say Walt Bodine is to Kansas City what callers are to talk shows.
Kelly, any parting words?
I just want to say that one other thing that I will always remember about Walt Bodine is that I joined him when he was late in his career, and he was blind, and he was in a wheelchair with crippling arthritis. But that man got up every day in his mid to late 80s and came into work to be on the air because it's what he loved, and he had a real passion for that. And when I think I'm having a bad day, I think about Walt and his commitment to his show and to journalism, and I think, you know what, you can do it too.
Journalist Kelly Weiss, she was Walt's colleague and friend. Kelly did it, now it's your turn. Fill in the blanks. Walt Bodine is to Kansas City like blank is to blank. Think about it and then join the conversation. We've posted it on our Facebook page. Thanks. Friends, family, and listeners are invited to a celebration of life for Walt Bodine. It's being hosted by his family this Saturday at 1 o'clock, Unity Temple on the Plaza. This show is put together with the help of a lot of people from KCUR and from the greater Kansas City community. The show, we call it KC Remembers, was produced by Suzanne Hogan. The documentary To Kansas City with Love was produced by Suzanne and former Walt co-host Gina Kaufman. A list of the voices in the documentary, in the order they appeared, Walt Bodine, Tom Bodine, Monroe Dodd, Marty Bodine, Max Skidmore, Michael Byers, Dan Verbeck, Loie Lockerbie, Aaron Barnhart, Patty Cahill, Sylvia Maria Gross, Mark Luce, Suzanne Hogan, Steve Bell, Emmanuel Cleaver II, Kim Noble, and Linda Scher. I'm Bill Anderson. On behalf of the KCUR staff, thanks for listening. And Walt, what would you say to that?